Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. NFL Week 5 on the docket. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, co-host, the one responsible for all the heavy lifting around these fine parts, the one, the only Payne Insider.
What a good morning it is with the old Yanks getting a dub for us.
You know what? It's been, I didn't realize it'd been since 2004 the last time I think the Yankees and Red Sox had met in the postseason.
I'm sure you're right. Now, I not that I want to be negative on this fine Thursday morning, but how freaking corny is it for an organization like the Yankees to be spraying each other with champagne and shit?
Act like because
you got into
before.
The playoffs. Oh, drives me nuts. If you're like the Brewers or you were Oakland and won last night, okay, perfect. But that's just embarrassing as hell for the Yankees organization, watching these guys freaking spray each other with champagne and wear goggles. Just embarrassing.
I mean, Payne,
tacky.
Let's be honest. It's not much different than sports gambling Twitter when everybody has to celebrate one win. I mean, that's pretty much how things work these days.
Shots early in the morning. I am going to stay away from that. Usually gets me riled up too much.
All right, we won't try and do that. Obviously, some big games on the schedule. We'll break them down in great detail. Dave Mason will join us a little bit later, not only to talk about the NFL action and how betonline.ag performed last weekend, but also share a little bit of a glimpse for who they'll need in the big UFC fight this weekend, Conor McGregor taking on Khabib. But Payne, obviously wanted to try and touch on Monday night's result with you first before we get into Week 5, put a bow on Week 4. Patrick Mahomes, not his best game statistically in his short career, but I'll make the case that was arguably his best, taking the Chiefs from down double digits in hostile territory, throwing passes with his left hand, leading Andy Reid and company to victory.
Yeah, I would concur. I think that's the first time we've seen him have a little adversity. They've been getting out to such big leads. It's easy to play when there's no pressure, but down two scores late in the fourth quarter to work your team all the way back and win the game, I think that was huge. That was a step in his growth process. Denver on the other side, just a mess, right? Vance Joseph, you can't lose that game. When you're at home, you're a defensive guy, you're up two touchdowns or two scores. That's not a game you can surrender, especially within the division. So as great as Patty Mahomes was, Vance Joseph got a little mud on his face there.
I mean, this is a Denver team taking on water very quickly, although that game and the narrative around it changes pretty quickly if Case Keenum can hit Demaryius Thomas streaking down the sidelines with about 25 seconds to go. As we said on the Monday podcast, though, 4.5 was the buy point. We would have loved to give the game out. Glad we didn't with the worst of the number. Best case scenario, our listeners would have pushed.
Case Keenum struggled. The pass game struggled, without question. The ground game, which is right now averaging 5.8 yards per rush attempt, was fantastic. That was the strategy going in, and it worked pretty well. But Case Keenum's got to step it up, man. He's been pretty bad at this point. Not the quarterback they envisioned getting over from Minnesota. Gives you an idea of how good Pat Shurmur was and that game plan was last year for the Vikings. But Case Keenum needs to step it up. They just need to get their offensive identity going. Now that they're able to run the ball against Kansas City, it'll be interesting to see what it looks like moving forward for Denver's offense. That battle there between Vance and Musgrave could continue.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't look to be an end in sight there as two of them try and, you know, rule with an iron fist and get the team to buy into their respective philosophy. So Denver will be a team that bears watching going forward. It will not be a game we cover in greater detail on the podcast for their trip to Gotham to take on the Jets. Payne, before we get into the games, though, a little contest winner update for us, perchance?
Oh, you caught me off guard there. There is not. I will tweet it out, though. I will give our winner his just due respect. I don't have that in front of me.
I just want to make sure that people don't think that we go through, we edit, we script everything we discuss. There's a lot of free form, so I didn't mean to put you on the spot there with that. But we'll give that individual, and he'll get his he or she will get their proper mention on the Monday podcast, as we like to try and crown all of our winners around these parts. We know how difficult a field it is to try and compete with. 5-0, no easy feat, and making sure you can land the tiebreaker accordingly. But Chiefs and Jaguars, the first game, Payne, you look at this number here. The Chiefs had 3-point favorite. You do need to lay $1.20 at betonline.ag. Total on this game sits at 49. For me, it's the unstoppable force in the Kansas City offense against the immovable object in the Jaguars defense. I'm not sure which matchup you find more fascinating, strength on strength or maybe weakness on weakness, with the Jags offense matched up against the Kansas City defense, which has struggled against opposing ground and pound attacks.
You know, I've said this for a while now. I think the blueprint for beating Kansas City, and regardless of that final score that we just talked about, Denver, I thought, executed the game plan to perfection. And I think it's, you have to score early and stay close with the Chiefs so you can have your full playbook. And, you know, I know it's 2018, it's a passing league, but I think you have to be able to establish that ground game, take advantage of the Chiefs defense. Right now, they're allowing 57% of runs to grade successful. That's dead last in the NFL. So you keep Patty Mahomes on the sideline. You keep him cozied up there with Andy Reid next to each other on the bench, whispering sweet nothings to each other. And I think that's how you beat this team. I think the question here is, can Jacksonville do that? You know, right now, middle of the pack, averaging 4.3 yards per rush attempt, just 43% of runs grade successful. We know Fournette's down, and now we have to monitor that Jags offensive line situation this week. Brandon Linder, he's been out for a while, potentially coming back. You have the prized free agent guard there, Andrew Norwell. He is yet to practice. But again, we do this on Thursday mornings. Wednesday is kind of a chill day. Thursday, Friday is really when you figure out if these guys are going to play. So you're going to want to monitor those two guys.
When you look at this game, Payne, and I never like to talk in narrative or hyperbole. I mean, that's not exactly how you make money in this business. Bigger game for Kansas City to defend their home turf at Arrowhead against one of the league's best defenses, or bigger statement moment for Jacksonville to go on the road and knock off Kansas City paired with their win earlier this season at home against the Patriots?
Oddly, I feel like it's Kansas City. I think this is their first true test against a defense that we think is very good. I would envision this is probably one of Patty Mahomes' toughest tests this season. It certainly is to date. You know, the first four games haven't been against a defense in the NFL in the top half of efficiency. When you look at who the Chiefs have faced this year, it's the fifth easiest schedule of opponent defenses. So this is a huge step up in class when you have the number two ranked Jaguars defense coming to town. You know, when I was doing some reading on this game, I stumbled upon a quote from Malik Jackson. There was an interview where the stud defensive lineman said one thing that he saw on Monday night that Denver didn't do and that teams aren't doing is keeping Patty Mahomes in the pocket. He says that's going to be the key here for this Jacksonville defense. And when you start to look at some of the numbers, Mahomes has been good in the pocket, but when he gets outside, he's been electric and he's really looking to take some deep shots. So he's been pushing the ball down the field when he gets outside the pocket. That, I think, is going to be the key matchup here. The other thing that was intriguing, you know, Blake Bortles. I don't know what we make of him at this point. I think he's certainly going to have to make some plays. I'm not going to say he needs to match Mahomes, and I could totally be getting bamboozled here with this, but when you look at this Jags offense, right, they're 12th in passing efficiency. They're letting him throw. I think that's the big thing. It's clear Jacksonville has some level of confidence in him, because I was poking around and it's just intrigued me so much. They've passed the ball the 12th most in the NFL. And some will say, oh, you know, middle of the pack. But when you look, they've only trailed in one game this season. It's been by only 3 points. So it feels like there's some confidence in Bortles, and he should have some opportunity here.
Now, you have to imagine T.J. Yeldon's going to need to step up into the void. 49 carries this season, 205 yards. Only one run so far this season, Payne, that we would probably grade as explosive for 20-plus yards. You mentioned Malik Jackson. Tashaun Gibson had some pretty strong praise from Mahomes as well, going, he's so good, I hope he throws me one. How about this? I'm going to talk him up all week. He's playing so good that when I pick him off, I might have to put his ball up there with Ben Roethlisberger and Drew Brees. That's how good I think he is. I mean, we've heard this Jacksonville defense talk trash about everybody, a lot of it led by Jalen Ramsey. That may be the ultimate sign of respect. So I think when you have a defense this talented and you have their attention like Patrick Mahomes does, they're going to want to go out there and try and make a statement any which way they can.
Without question, Gibson's going to have a tough task because it looks like he'll be on Kelsey. And, you know, that'll be the one spot. Let's see if you can remove Kelsey from the equation and Ramsey is manning Tyreek, what Mahomes does, right? This is an athletic Jacksonville defense. Their safeties can cover. Through four games, they've actually allowed the least amount of receptions and yards to tight ends. Just 11 total catches, 100 total yards, and four games surrendered against tight ends. So Kelsey could have a tough day.
Think there's any chance we see a hook pop on this game from 3 out to 3.5?
Let's just put it this way. There already was one. It opened there at a very sharp shop, did not last long, came down. We are now trending back up a little bit. I think it's possible, but I'm not sure how long it will last. So if it's in front of your screen and you do like Jacksonville, I think you go, and it's just because of the numbers, right? You're looking at Jacksonville right now. They're a net positive 1.3 yards per play. Kansas City after Monday night is now a net negative 0.1 yards per play.
And of course, as I say that, there is a 3.5 available out here in the desert. But as Payne always refers to, this being fantasy land when it comes to sports bettors and being able to move money sometimes on Thursdays.
Certainly a little easier to grab some numbers out that way, for sure.
There's no doubt about that. But from one defense that one team that
you
can
didn't
play,
even appreciate my corporate response there.
I was going to say, you're getting much better at being buttoned up about not trying to take the bait when I throw it out there. Because when we first started recording these podcasts, it was like sharks in the water. I would drop some chum in there, and I know full well that you were going to try and go after it full speed. Now I do it, and you're just going to, you know what, I'm not going to take that bait.
Getting older, I don't have the energy to deal with you.
That's a very good point. I mean, you did tell me before we got on the air today that you had to go into the caffeine to try and make yourself alive and well for this thing.
Yeah, it took a little shot of 5-hour energy for this one.
And you are not one of those 5-hour energy guys. I live on the stuff. I know you choose not to. But from one team that plays very good defense to two teams that have played none so far in 2018, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag. You do have to lay $1.30 as this number trends ever so close to 3.5. Total in this game, the highest we've seen in the NFL this season, 57.5, as the Falcons tread to Heinz Field. Payne, I guess I have to ask you this. Which team is actually worse on defense between these much maligned teams that had expectations of winning their respective divisions and conferences?
With all the injuries to the Falcons defense, Atlanta is significantly worse defensively than Pittsburgh. When you look at some of the metrics, Atlanta 30th in defensive efficiency. You're just battling at that point in the cellar with KC and Tampa. You know, the Steelers are actually, you know, just below average, coming in at 19th in defensive efficiency. And this shocked me a little bit when I dug in. Only 43% of passes have graded successful against Pitt. That's actually 8th best in the NFL. And I know it's early, but maybe there's room for improvement for both defenses simply because both have faced extremely tough schedules of opponent offenses through 4 weeks. You're looking at Atlanta. They face the toughest schedule of offenses. Pittsburgh, the 7th toughest. Now, again, it's early in the season. It's sample size, so there is a caveat to that, right? Like, you know, the offenses have played your leaky defense, and it's contributed to 25% of the sample. So it could just be that sample contributing to the schedules of offenses you faced. But there needs to be improvement. Pittsburgh, I think, with Joe Hayden back, has been a little bit better in the pass game defensively.
One thing about the Steelers this season, they've been dreadful early in football games. Outscored so far this season, paying 42-6 in the first quarter. The problem being is if you play three good quarters after that, you can mask some of those deficiencies. But they only scored one fourth quarter touchdown so far, and they've been shut out back-to-back games in the second half. So I ask you this, against a team in Atlanta that we know can go up and down the field, albeit not nearly as dynamic when they leave the confines of the dome, do you trust the Steelers' offense enough against this Falcons defense to get sevens and not settle for threes?
You're going to have to, right? This is going to need to be a team that relies on its offense. It's as simple as that. And right now it's below average, 19th in overall offensive efficiency. It's not going to cut it. And I think there's a lot of factors here at play. And I know everyone will focus on Le'Veon Bell missing. And certainly I think that's hindered the offense because he's a guy that can do it all. He's got all four pitches, so to speak. James Conner, great story, decent player, very good catching the ball. but he's got one pitch, right? And so, like, two things come to mind when I watch these games, and then I peek at it metrically afterwards. And I think you hit on it. It's the poor initial game plan, and then there's some, you know, Mike Tomlin, some poor late game adjustments. And, you know, this is a brand new offense, right? With Randy Fichtner, who's calling plays in meaningful games for the first time in his career, did call some preseason games the last few years, but it's different when the bullets are live, man. And then you had Antonio Brown. He was kind of hampered all offseason with nagging injuries. So he doesn't still quite look himself. And I was looking at this the other day. Big Ben, the worst fourth quarter quarterback in the entire league through 4 weeks, and it's by a long mile. I mean, he's completing 48% of his passes in the fourth quarter. Even Sam Darnold is completing 56% of his fourth quarter passes, and just a lot of this is ugly. Big Ben, fourth quarter, just successful on 27% of his passes. That's the worst in the NFL by 5%. There's no depth to his passes, 4.7 yards per attempt in the fourth quarter. I mean, he's dead last in virtually everything at this point in the fourth quarter, and it's ugly. Now, I think James Conner here probably has a decent day catching passes against the Falcons defense, and now you're without, you know, Grady Jarrett, a premium run-stuffing defensive tackle. Maybe the Steelers' ground game gets going this week a little bit.
Well, and you mentioned the Steelers' ground game. Since week two, where they actually had some success, week one against the Browns, they're last in the league in yards per carry, 2.83. Last in the league in yards per game, 43 1/3. And last with rushing first downs, only 6. So if they can't get going this week against this Falcons defensive front, who, as you mentioned, are going to be down another key cog in Grady Jarrett, not exactly a recipe for success. On the other side, Payne, Matt Ryan, first player in NFL history to lose back-to-back games, throwing for 350-plus yards, 3-plus passing touchdowns, and no interceptions. The last two games, he's a shade under 400 yards per game and 8 touchdowns, yet an 0-2 record. Do you trust Atlanta's offense to score consistently against the Steelers' defense on the road?
You have to. I mean, I think at this stage, right, it's got to be all about the Falcons' offense. They're going to have to be more aggressive, more efficient, and based on how bad their defense is, like, Matt Ryan's going to keep compiling some of those numbers that you mentioned there, because they're going to be in a shootout virtually every week. You know, Calvin Ridley, he's been a great complement to Julio Jones. Most teams don't have two high-caliber starting corners. You can't cheat on Julio now, and I know Jones and his fantasy owners probably would like some more touchdowns, but he's still on pace for over 2,000 receiving yards. So when you look at this matchup, Pittsburgh doesn't really defend the middle of the field very well. Maybe they take out some of those outside receivers, but in the middle of the field, I think you can feast there. They're allowing a 104 passer rating on all throws from 0 to 14 yards in the middle. Atlanta's offense doesn't really throw to the tight end. But when you look at how you would game plan for this one, you'd think Hooper over the middle, Sanu in the slot. That would be this week's game plan. Pittsburgh's allowed 30 receptions to tight ends in 4 games. That's the most in the NFL. They've given up the 4th most yards and 3 touchdowns to tight ends. So you need to get Austin Hooper involved here a little bit. And I think you get some help this week as well. Devontae Freeman, if healthy, he's supposed to be back. He provides a little different element to this offense. I don't mind Tevin Coleman, but when you back out the one Panthers game, and Coleman's averaging 2.7 yards per rush attempt over the other 3 games. So if you can add that ground game, certainly will help Matt Ryan, and I think probably helps the defense a little bit too if they're over on the sidelines.
Yeah, I mean, you got to find a way to try and mask some of those deficiencies on the defensive side. A game that should be interesting, at least from a point spread perspective, is we've obviously seen some money come in on the Steelers, and as we mentioned, the total, the highest we've seen in the league thus far. So if you have Steelers or Falcons anywhere near your fantasy team, get those guys into the lineup. Should be a fun game to watch on Sunday afternoon. Payne, Bengals and Dolphins, another game that we have on our list to discuss today. And we've seen some money come in early Thursday morning on the Dolphins. This number's kind of ping-ponged all over the place. Got as high as the soft 7 in some locations, has come down. When I look at this total, 49.5 at betonline.ag, the Dolphins were nothing short of pathetic last weekend in the 38-7 loss on the road against New England, which has been their house of horrors. Cincinnati, some last-second heroics to come back against the Atlanta Falcons. What do you make of the Bengals, especially a defense that gets their leader back in Vontaze Burfict?
It's huge, obviously. I think that's massive. You know, we've talked about how he contributes in the run game and how much improved that defense can be. And they need him because they've struggled a little bit to start the season. When you're looking at this matchup here just a little bit, I mean, you know, the one game sample there against New England really crushed all the metrics for Miami. So it doesn't look good coming in. And now you're going to be without your starting center, Daniel Kilgore. I don't know how good he is, you know, through the first 4 weeks. Graded out the fourth worst center out of 36 qualifiers. But I think now when you add that to Josh Sitton being out, that's some trouble. Travis Swanson probably isn't a downgrade, but you just become so thin on that offensive line now, and the Dolphins just don't have depth. The tight end position for the Dolphins is extremely banged up at this point. There was a left tackle that played some tight end last week for the Dolphins. So that's pretty ugly there. Now the blueprint is out a little bit on how to beat the Dolphins. They're going to need Devontae Parker back healthy because he is the one guy that can line up outside and beat single man coverage. He just can't stay healthy. That was the knock on him in college, and it's proven to be true in the NFL. What the Patriots did last week defensively was force the Dolphins to beat them in the ground game, and they played seven defensive backs and pressed and forced receivers that were being schemed open to win one-on-one battles, and they couldn't do it. So we'll see what comes of it offensively. I know last year when Gase decided to cut some guys in the middle of the season, it really lit a fire under Miami. And when you look at just kind of the local landscape down here, it's crazy. People are absolutely nuts. They're delusional with the Dolphins. After the 3-0 start, you lose one game to the best team in the entire league for the last two decades, and the fire Gase stuff is back. It's absolutely nuts what's going on down here this week. The world is ending at 3-1.
I imagine the 172-yard offensive outburst contributed a little bit to that. As you mentioned, this is a Dolphins team still yet to surpass 400 yards in offense in a single game this season, but matched up against the Bengals defense. It's 29th in yards allowed, 10th in most points allowed, last in third down defense, allowing their opponents to convert at 57% clip. And they've allowed 305 or more passing yards in three out of their four games. The only team they held in check was Carolina, who ran the ball for 230 yards. Do you think this is a good matchup where Miami has some success showing a balanced offense against a Bengals defense that at least checks boxes on paper, but hasn't maybe lived up to it, its Vance billing, despite their lofty record to start?
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins are going to have to be able to score some points here because I'm not sure you can shut Cincinnati out right now. That's the biggest thing. They're going to have to keep up. They're going to have to keep pace. They're going to have to get the ground game going. I mean, they're going to have to get Kenyon Drake going. Like, there can't be a game where he has three carries. I love Frank Gore, but Kenyon Drake is that guy. He needs to see more snaps, and maybe that'll help the offense out a little bit. What I am looking at and what I'm potentially concerned with is the Bengals offense against the Dolphins defense. And right now, because the Dolphins aren't converting third downs on offense, they can't stay on the field, and the Dolphins defense isn't stopping teams on third down, they've had 157 defensive snaps the last 2 weeks. And so they're a thin unit right now. We talked about this last week. William Hayes, one of the very best run-setting edge defenders in the NFL, he's out for the season. That meant more snaps for Charles Harris, and he is horrific and could not set an edge, and Bill Belichick realized it and just ran right up his ass, and it forced them not to play him. And so in came a guy off the practice squad who recorded more snaps than Charles Harris last week. With Joe Mixon back, you could see a lot of the ground game going for Cincinnati. The one I think positive would be is Tyler Eifert is out this week, and that's a big loss, especially when you look at the Miami Dolphins, who haven't been able to really stop the tight end in previous seasons, right? Last year, the Dolphins were a mess. They allowed 94 receptions, 10 touchdowns, and over 1,000 yards to tight ends. They surrendered the most fantasy points to tight ends. Now, it's changed a little bit this year when you bring in Minka Fitzpatrick, you bring in Jerome Baker. They've been able to cover the tight end, but it's a small sample size. So either way, Eifert being out this week is a huge loss. Miami catches a break not having to face him this week.
You expect John Ross to give it a go? I mean, with dealing with a groin injury, another weapon for the Bengals?
I don't know with John Ross. That's a guy that we've talked about being constantly injured. Had a nice positive play against Atlanta, catching a touchdown, and then injured himself somehow catching a touchdown. I don't know If he doesn't play, I think that's big because, you know, you also have some injuries on the defensive side of the ball for the Dolphins. They're going to be without Bobby McCain. He's been their number two corner, also slides inside sometimes playing the slot. So that is a massive loss. The Dolphins don't really have a great second cornerback. So if Ross is available, he could feast. Boyd could have a nice day there as well with Bobby McCain out. And then again, just talking about the thinness of that defensive line. Branch, let's see if he plays. They did cut Jordan Phillips, who's extremely talented, but just doesn't care, doesn't try hard enough. Adam Gase was done with him. And so now you're playing three defensive interior linemen. That's all that's on the roster right now. So it's a thin defense this week for the Dolphins.
Interesting game to see if the Dolphins are for real, if they can salvage something from this two-game stretch against New England and Cincinnati. From an AFC showdown pain to a game in the NFC, two teams trying to figure out their identity 1 year removed from playing in the NFC Championship. Of course, Philadelphia went on to win the Super Bowl. It's the Eagles, a 3-point favorite, lay $1.20 at betonline.ag. Total in the game, 45. Revenge, obviously, on the minds of the Vikings as they look to try and right the ship after back-to-back losses. Some extra time to prepare. Vikings offensive coordinator John DeFilippo coached the Eagles quarterbacks last year, so you have a little bit of familiarity in that regard. But I guess I can start with the Eagles. And while you hate to use the term Super Bowl hangover, I mean, to you, who watches these teams week in, week out, what looks or feels different about the Eagles through four games so far this season?
The guys on the field. I mean, you know, offensively, the roster has been decimated with injury. You know, you got the three key cogs, Wentz, Elshon, and Ajayi, and Sproles even. You know, they've missed time or they're working their way back from pretty heavy injuries. And so I think you combine that with what you said. Every team is giving it their best shot every single week against the Super Bowl champ. And so, you know, things haven't been great at this point. I mentioned on our week one podcast when we were talking Atlanta, Malcolm Jenkins came out and said, hey, there's this feeling of complacency. And that forced Doug Peterson to remove the championship banner from the locker room. This Eagles team right now, when you're looking at the entire landscape, has been outgained by nearly a half yard per play this season. And this is a Philly organization that we know is fully in tune with the analytics. So I think when they look at things offensively, they get Wentz back, but they're 26th in passing success rate. And it wasn't until last week, against Tennessee, that they'd completed a pass in the air over 20 yards. So I think they're feeling fortunate being 2-2, especially when you consider all the things that I just mentioned there offensively, and they're fully aware of it. This is one of the largest analytics teams in the entire NFL. And so when you take it a next step further, right, they've actually faced one of the easiest schedules of opponent defenses through the first 4 weeks. So those numbers are even a little bit more alarming. I think I like what I've seen from Wentz. He looks to be healthier. I think he's going to be, I would think, back close to 100% well before that week 10 mark that we initially projected.
It's always good to see the superstars in the league, whether or not you root for the Eagles or back them on a regular basis, to see him out there rapidly improving, one of the faces of the league going forward. Opposing him for Minnesota, Kirk Cousins. And you look at Cousins, he has an established track record against the Eagles, 7 games in his career. He's gone 177 to 275 for over 2,100 yards, 16 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and a 4-3 record. On the road at Philadelphia, he's actually only 2-2, paying a 12-3 touchdown interception ratio and a 112 passer rating. But when you look at this Vikings team, I don't want to blame Cousins for the loss against the Rams. What the hell is going on with this defense? I mean, largely regarded as one of the best coming into the season. I mean, they've been well below average, at least for the first couple of games.
Yeah, they're having issues getting the defense going, without question. The exotic schemes have given them trouble. They're, you know, if you're smart, you're really trying to focus in on Anthony Barr's coverage weaknesses. And so far, teams are doing that. And I think that's the struggle. The secondary hasn't been very good either. Zimmer's pulling his hair out. I was just reading some quotes. I mean, if there is going to be a bounce back, you would think at least from an energy standpoint, it's going to be this week. I mean, he was just tearing down the hallways in that locker room from what I've been told this week. He is none too happy. So hopefully we get a little bit more of a game performance here. Wentz could still have some success, though, I would think. You know, that's just me. This Vikings defense has given up some explosive plays, 17 of them in 4 games. A lot of them did come last week against McVay and the Rams offense. But I think there's probably, you know, I don't think we're going to see a full fix, even with the extended time here from this Minnesota defense. I think Philadelphia could have some success here, especially, you know, another week under Elshon's belt. Ajayi is trending towards playing a little bit. I think there's some matchups there in the middle of the field, again, exposing Anthony Barr in coverage. That could be an ideal situation. I know Doug Peterson really likes to focus in on that two-headed monster now he has at tight end with Goddard and Ertz. So there could be some room here despite the energy increase from the defensive side of the ball for Minnesota this week.
Do you think anything changes for the Vikings' ground game? I mean, their offense, in terms of at least efforts to run the football, has been downright atrocious. Three games, they've been held to 68 yards or less, dead last in the league right now, averaging 63 yards per game. I know some of that attributed to Dalvin Cook and, of course, the offensive line injuries that have been well chronicled here on the podcast.
Yeah, I think that's the huge question mark, and it's going to be the question mark every single week when you have this Vikings offense, right? Right now, they're ranking 19th in adjusted sack rate, 26th in adjusted line yards, and you're going up against Philly's defensive front, right? You have to compete in that matchup. You kind of have to make a stalemate of that matchup to have some success. It's arguably the best defensive line in the NFL. If you can, I think Cousins and these receiving weapons, you're going to find some success. You're going to be able to make some plays against that Eagle secondary. The question becomes is the pressure. When it comes, can you get Cousins to feel it? Can he step up into the pocket? Can he be a little bit better in that regard? And if he can, this passing game could be elite. Right now, it's one of the very best play-action offenses, despite having a non-existent ground game that ranks dead last in rushing success rate. Guys far smarter than me suggest you actually don't need to be a successful running team for the, you know, the play-action to work based on their data, and I'm starting to believe it. When you look at the All-22, it's just human nature for linebackers to get stuck or take that full step forward when the play action with that play action element. So I'm not sure they need to, and you need some semblance of a ground game, but right now, if you can just focus on the play action game offensively and passing, I think that's going to help alleviate some pressure off that offensive line. And if you can get the ball out quick, you're going to have success against this Eagles secondary.
This is an Eagles team that's thrived in their own building, 14-6 against the number the last 20 they've played in the city of brotherly love. And final note, or question, I should say, Payne, on this game. If either of these teams, whoever comes out with another loss on their resume, do you start to worry more and more about their season outlook? Because I think most people, probably ourselves included, saw both of them as shoo-ins to make the NFL postseason.
Would be more worried if Minnesota loses. Because that puts them at, what, 1-3?
Yeah, I think Philadelphia, 1-3-1.
Yeah, Philadelphia can overcome 2-3 in that division, certainly. And we're just going to see Wentz continuing to trend up health-wise. So I think it's more vital for Minnesota to win here.
That's a should be a great game Sunday afternoon. Very curious to see if Minnesota can right some of the issues that have plagued them, at least through the early going in the season. But we mentioned hitting the panic button and maybe two teams battling for the Lone Star State bragging rights in the Texans and Cowboys. It's the Houston Texans, a 3-point favorite, lay $1.20 at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 45.5. And Payne, I don't want to go as far as saying can either of these teams salvage their season, but I look at the Dallas Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott, 240 all-purpose yards last week. I mean, is he capable of carrying the workload against a Texans defense that's much stouter against the run than what Ezekiel ran into last weekend against the Detroit Lions?
They're going to need him to be. And I get that he's built like a brick shit house. And I think if there's a running back that could be able to shoulder that kind of load every game, it's him. But, you know, 30 touches is a lot per game, especially when you consider the kinds of touches Zeke is getting right now. The way he runs, he's searching out contact. But I think it's probably needed. The overall rushing success rate has dipped with Frederick, the all-world center, out. The last two seasons, and we've talked about this, I think, ad nauseum. The last 2 years, Dallas was number one in rushing success rate. This season, Dallas is down roughly 6% in that category, where they're hovering around the top 10 in rushing success rate. And I think to the casual fan, maybe that doesn't sound like a huge decrease, but I think it is for an offense that wants to be run first, for a team whose entire makeup is being run first. And I think somewhat concerning in the part of that decrease is it's come against the second easiest schedule of run defenses through 4 weeks.
When you look at this Cowboys offense, Payne, Dak Prescott, only two 200-yard games in his previous 11 starts going back to last season. He was a little better than that last week, and you finally saw some big play potential throwing the football down the field. I mean, Dak had just one completion of at least 20 yards over the first three games. Then he has three against the Lions. Have you seen enough from the Dallas passing game to lead you to believe that they can get on track, or is this going to be an ongoing struggle all season long? Just given the fact he doesn't have a lot of weapons at his disposal, and if teams sell out to stop the run, Dak can't get separation, or his receivers can't get separation to beat guys in one-on-one matchups.
It was a positive sign to see what Dak did last week, but it has to be consistent. It has to happen consistently. When I look at the All-22, I lean towards what Cole Beasley was saying. Receivers were doing a decent job creating separation. Again, though, like, it was the Lions defense. They're 26th in passing success rate defense. And situationally, I think when you come in, you know, off the Super Bowl win over New England, there was an advantage there as well. Let's see if Dak can take advantage of a beat up Texans secondary and make it two straight weeks of efficient quarterback play. I'll feel a little bit better if he can do it again this week.
Well, and you mentioned the Texans banged up secondary. Aaron Colvin hasn't practiced yet this week. The Texans finally get in the win column despite their best efforts to spit the bit at Lucas Oil Stadium against the Colts. What have you seen from the Texans defensively, who now are 25th in yards per pass attempt allowed, 26th in opponents' completion percentage, and, oh, by the way, 27th in opponents' passing yards per game at a shade less than 300 per?
Oof. You know, I think Houston's done a decent job limiting the big play. They've been above average in both explosive run and pass defense. I think what's scary when you're trying to gauge some of the defensive numbers there for the Texans, right now they face the fifth easiest schedule in the NFL. Fortunately for them, when you try to project out the future schedule, it isn't any more difficult. But I think as a whole, you know, if we're expecting an elite Texans defense to return, we might not see it with Mike Vrabel now moved on to Tennessee. I just think he's a far superior defensive mind than Romeo Crennel.
Offensively from the Texans, Deshaun Watson, we knew was going to take a little bit of time to get back in the swing of things leading the offense. Will Fuller goes out with an injury last game, and the I believe he's from Texas Tech. Kiki Kuti steps in as the number two, 11 catches on 15 targets opposite DeAndre Hopkins. As far as the Texans' offense, do they have an edge from a schematic standpoint attacking a Dallas defense that's seventh in the league in scoring defense, allowing less than 20 points per game, but still without the services of their anchor in Sean Lee?
You know, you should have some success here. And it's tough to kind of project this out because right now the Texans' offense, it has really high highs and it has really low lows. And all of it together has really resulted in mediocrity. And, you know, they're just a roughly average team running the ball right now, below average passing when you look at success rates. You know, Houston is getting some big plays with Deshaun Watson. He's extending things nicely, and he's got two great pass-catching targets that are deep down the field in Watkins and Fuller. So there has been some explosiveness in that throw game, but it's just not good enough as a whole. You know, visually to me, this Texans offensive line hasn't been good. And for the second season in a row, Watson just continues to be one of the most pressured quarterbacks in the league. When you look at some of the metrics, though, you know, adjusted line yards, adjusted sack rate, somehow Houston is 11th and 5th in those categories. Blew my mind when I looked at that last night. Again, it's just a short sample. And I think when you look at the matchup, you know, the Dallas defensive line has been awesome so far. Fourth in adjusted sack rate. Now they're going to get David Irving back from suspension. So that's probably going to be the matchup that dictates this game. You know, that Dallas defensive line versus the Texans offensive line.
Think the as far as the side in total numbers are concerned, airtight with this right at a field goal. I know there are some 3.5s out there. You have to lay a price to back the dog. And the total really hasn't budged at 45.5.
I think what I have seen so far to this point there's been a little sharp money on Houston. I'm not sure I'm in that camp quite yet. Certainly, if this pushes towards 3.5, I'm not going to be on the Texans. But there was one group that did like Houston this week at 3.
Their records may not suggest it, but I think this game will go a long way in determining what we're going to see from the Cowboys and Texans going forward. So I'll call this appointment viewing on Sunday night. We do have one other big game to get to. That, of course, the Thursday night football showdown between the Colts and the Patriots. But before we get there, it's time for the Sportsbook Perspective. He joins us every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast to talk all things National Football League. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, I gotta ask, I can't imagine Monday night was one for the record books as far as the house was concerned, with that game falling 4 between Denver and Kansas City.
Yeah, that was a bad end to the weekend. It was pretty brutal, to tell you the truth. Plus all the teasers hit, and we 71% of the action was on the Broncos, so we were looking good there. And then Patrick Mahomes is throwing with left hands, right hands, and everything, and. Yep, and it falls 4 when most of the action was on 3 on the Chiefs -3.5, and teasers are hitting every which way, and turned a decent weekend into a break-even weekend.
Aside from that result, Dave, how did the public and professionals fare on Sunday slate?
The big, like I said, is a break-even weekend. The house won on Ravens, Cards, and 49ers, where the players were on Sunday. Pats and Raiders were their biggest winner. Pats was massive. Not a lot of huge decisions, but the two biggest decisions definitely went the players' way with the Chiefs and the Patriots. Patriots was massive on Sunday.
And when we look at Week 5, Dave, how is it shaping up so far? Anything sharp coming in or any massive public liability? I'd have to envision the Thursday night game with the public going right back to New England.
Yeah, you're right. Public, 67% of the bets are on the Patriots tonight, -10. Sunday, a lot of one-sided stuff. Ravens, 83%. Titans, 81%. Broncos, 81%. Packers, 85%. And the biggest game is going to be the Rams, 83%. And even though they're a 4 o'clock game, they're already taking the most bets for a Sunday slate. So not only is it the most heavy bet game, but 83% of the early bets are on the Rams. Professionals, we got Colts under 53 tonight. Oakland +5.5, that's now 4.5. Steelers -3, -115, that's -3, -130. Steelers over 56.5, that's up to 57. So that's the sharp stuff so far, but more to come in today and over the next couple days.
Always interesting to kind of see how the action comes in early in the week. But Dave, football isn't the only thing that'll be going on at betonline.ag this weekend. A massive fight by UFC standards. I mean, Dana White's come out and said they're expecting almost 3 million pay-per-view buys on the Conor McGregor-Khabib fight. What have you guys seen as far as the way the general public is betting it? And have you seen any money come in from the professionals taking a stance on either fighter?
Yeah, professionals, we saw it weeks back, probably over a month ago, when we got Khabib at -155. That's why we have not gone that low so far. The public is on Conor big time. 82% of the bets last I looked are on McGregor. Not surprising. Again, McGregor at +144. The odds are going to go down, I believe, even despite sharp action. It's just going to be one of those fights, like you said, that the pay-per-views are going to be record-setting. The fight is going to be – we're going to get more action on this fight than any MMA fight in the history of the company. So it's going to be a huge decision. So I think if you're looking for Khabib, it's going to go down. If you're betting Conor, I think you should bet it early. Of course, they could work the opposite way, but I don't think it will. I think you're going to get value on Khabib as the fight nears, and if you're on Conor, I don't think you should wait too long.
Real quick, Dave, on a fight like that, don't mean to put you on the spot. Do you guys plan just go in, hey, we're going to hold our position. We know professional money's coming in on one fighter. Just kind of peel back the curtain a little bit for an event of this magnitude for some of our listeners.
An event like this, we football, NFL week 5 or whatever the heck we're in, you know, we take those positions. We talked about that yesterday in college with that college game last night, the Penn State Ohio State game, and New England the week before. We take those positions. But kind of when these one-off events, whether it be a big fight like this or a Super Bowl or Mayweather McGregor is a great example. I mean, that those odds opened -2,000 on Mayweather, and anybody that knew anything knew that those should have been the odds. But, I mean, people were getting -400 day of fight just because there was so much action on it. So, you know, sharps are going to have – if they're on Khabib like we think they're going to be, they're going to get value on this. We're going to go a little lower than we want to just to get some buyback. Normally, you know, an NFL week, a college week, whatever, we don't mind taking those positions, but it's a one-off event like this where a lot of people might just come in and bet this fight and be done with it. We handle it a little bit differently. And we don't give away the house by any means. Well, you know, the Mayweather-McGregor fight, that was kind of an anomaly, and we're never going to see something like that again, I don't think. But yeah, you'll be able to get some value on Khabib, I believe.
Rare to find those once-in-a-lifetime paydays like we did with Mayweather and McGregor. But for those players who are new to the game and want to try and get some of their funds in betonline.ag for the earliest college football and NFL numbers every single week, what type of promotions are available for them, Dave? And for some of those folks that may need a reload after the first month of the season, what can they find at the shop?
Yes, sir. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, head on over, sign up for one, use promo code 75BTB. For a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% bonus. Max bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard. And one last thing. The MLB playoffs are here. We have dime lines up to minus 185. Just looking at tonight's game, it's minus 174, take back plus 164. That's better than any bonus you're going to get, those high dime lines. The end.
Take full advantage of the best number. We tell our Bet the Board listeners all the time, it's hard enough to pick winners. It's even harder when you're not taking advantage of the shortest prices in the business. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, we know you'll be active and aggressive this weekend with so much action on the docket. Best of luck and look forward to chatting college football with you this time next Wednesday.
Have a great weekend, boys.
Never a good thing, Payne, for the house when you get middled in prime time around what we would call probably secondary key numbers with the Kansas City Chiefs winning that game by exactly 4.
No, absolutely not. And then when you think about the kind of money you're taking in, right? So it's big professional money at the optimal number at 5.5 and 5. Then you do have some tail action of a couple bettors that probably took 4 and pushed. But on game day, when the public does the majority of their betting, you know, you were allowing them to lay 3.5. So you get the big money early, and then you get the big money as a whole from just a series of public bets on the Chiefs late. That didn't go very well. They did get the under, though, so that kind of probably soothed some things, because if that went over, it would have been just a total debacle.
Yeah, it was always interesting when Dave mentions the fact that any teaser leg you would have played on side or total ends up cashing there. So it changes the dynamic a little bit, but you're exactly right. When you look at these standalone games, especially on Monday, professionals gobble up the best of the number, and it's hard to get enough money coming in from recreational bettors on the dog, in this case the Denver Broncos, plus 3.5. So that liability can get ratcheted up pretty quickly, and on the heels of what Dave made it sound like was a middling weekend, not exactly the way you want to close up shop Monday morning. But as we look towards the game tonight, we know the public is backing the New England Patriots. And this game, Payne, we're looking at New England, a 10-point favorite at betonline.ag, total on the game 50.5. I think what I've been blown away by when I dug into this a little bit was how good the Colts have been from a defensive efficiency standpoint, 10th in the league, while the Patriots are 16th. Meanwhile, it's the Colts' offense still trying to very much figure out its identity, 25th in that regard, while the Patriots just outside the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, let's go with the Colts' offense first, because I think that's where we thought the bread would be buttered. And I know, you know, some of the efficiency metrics there, you mentioned 25th isn't great. And right now this, you know, Frank Reich, Andrew Luck offense isn't explosive. 31st in explosive passing, 28th in explosive runs, just 10 total explosive plays in 4 games. That's not very good, but they've done a good job being successful with the short passing game. So the dink and dunk has worked so far, 13th in passing success rate. And I think the positive takeaway here is this: the Colts have faced the 8th toughest schedule of defenses. Luck is still working his way back from just like what was almost 2 years of inactivity. And then you have your first year NFL coach. He's still learning the ropes. So if this is what it looks like, if this is the worst of it, I think it's a positive sign for the Colts offense. And, you know, when you try to kind of project it out tonight, when you look at potentially how New England's going to defend them, I wouldn't think there's going to be a ton of change from what we saw last week defensively for New England. And, you know, you're on that short week. I don't think you're going to instill some ridiculous game plan. And obviously being at home, I think, you know, you got the advantage there, Belichick. But you just kind of look, I think where this advantage could come in for New England defensively is look at who they just played, right? It was a Dolphins offense that struggles to run the ball a little bit. The Colts do too. It was an offense without the top playmaker, no Devontae Parker outside, no T.Y. Hilton tonight. And it's two offenses that I think like to dink and dunk. So when you have that combination of can't run overly well, throw short, New England, what I saw last week on film, they played 7 defensive backs on the field last week. And they played press coverage. Stephon Gilmore is much better doing that than playing off. And it forced, you know, a Miami offense, and it forces likely an Indianapolis offense that doesn't have guys that can consistently win one-on-one. It forces them to run the ball, and neither do that great. So I think there's that underlying advantage here in this game where New England is going to virtually game plan and see an offense that was extremely similar to what they saw last week.
And when you look at the Patriots on the other side of the ball offensively, I mean, this is a team that's thrived on short rest. Tom Brady since 2010, 15-2 record, 38 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. When I go through New England and I try and figure out what this offense is going to look like, Payne, we know September almost serves as an extended preseason for them. Rob Gronkowski, we expect him to play today dealing with that ankle injury. Josh Gordon nursing a hamstring. Julian Edelman back in the fold. I know New England's offense isn't going to be running on all cylinders yet. Give it a couple of weeks before that happens. But if the Colts are down their defensive leader through just a few short games in Darius Leonard, how much does it change the dynamic for what Indianapolis can do to at least attempt to slow down the Patriots' offense tonight?
Well, that'd be a massive loss. And when I just look at, again, how you want to attack, the one thing I noticed last week, the Patriots got back to smash mouth football on offense. A lot of eye formation. They controlled the line of scrimmage. It was like, dude, it was a scene from a game from before the illegal forward pass. Like, I mean, it was just, it was nuts what they were doing offensively. They threw it back, and I kind of went back and dug in, and it seems like when this Patriots offense struggles for a few games, they get back to smash mouth football. It's back to basics. Now you're looking again on this short week, looking at a Colts, as your opponent. The game plan, again, might not look different because of the Colts. They've allowed 51% of runs to great successful. So I could see a game where you're establishing the run again. Trying to be physical on a short week against a defense, as you alluded to, could be a little thin with injuries. So, again, I don't think we're going to see a ton of change offensively from the Patriots week over week. And I think the total coming down, obviously, T.Y. Hilton out, Gronk questionable, but the style kind of that I think is going to be played is showing in the market as well. Now, you mentioned Edelman coming back. What is he going to be like game one? And not that I don't want to divulge the information. I don't think we can. Is he going to be right tonight? I don't know. Is his confidence going to be there? I don't know. Gronk still dealing with the ankle. Gordon still dealing with the new playbook. If all three are at their best, and that's probably a couple weeks down the road, suddenly this offense is going to hum. But right now, are we going to see the peak possibilities of this offense tonight? Probably not in my mind.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I was going to mention the total. You hit on it moving down from 52.5. I have listed as the opener trending.
Higher, 53 in some places.
Yeah, you're right, 53, excuse me. And when I look through that game and try and figure out where the stops are going to come from, I guess one of the things oftentimes that recreational bettors and I forget as well, as long as you put together long methodical drives and you take 6 to 7 minutes off the clock and settle for field goals, it's tough for games to go over totals this high in the NFL, even in the high-flying, high-octane 2018 version of the league.
Oh, you hit it perfectly. And you look at what New England does. They play bend but don't break. So that's cool. If the Colts are methodically moving the ball down the field, we'll give you the dink and dunk. We'll give you the 4-yard pass. It's the same as a run. We'll let the clock churn. And then when you get down in scoring position, we're going to hold you to 3. It's the same thing. If the Patriots are going to go to this more ground and pound attack that we saw last week where they ran the ball 40 times, picking up 4 or 5 yards, that's a positive, right? I always say this all the time. When you have an under, you want the offenses to have, and it's not a false sense, but a somewhat false sense of, hey, we can run the ball here. We can pick up 3-4 yards a pop, and that's going to keep the clock churning.
When you look at the other storylines in this game, Payne, we know about Josh McDaniels spurning the Colts for their head coach job. Frank Reich was their third choice before he was ultimately, given the reins to run this franchise. Reich also prepared for this Patriots defense not too long ago in the Super Bowl, and we know what kind of success the Eagles had. Do we use any of those factors in the handicapping, or are those just better storylines to discuss than they are to profit from in the gambling
sense? You also have the Flategate here, bro. I mean, no.
It's a good point. And the Patriots have, they have drummed the Colts even before Deflategate. I mean, outside of a 7-point decision in 2015, the other four previous meetings were absolute bloodbaths in favor of New England.
So it's always important with information to have a clue about how much it means internally. Now, at the current price, there's already been sharp money on the Colts. I'm not touching them at this point. I just can't do it. Professional bettors have gravitated towards the Colts. You know, Frank Reich has seen this Patriots offense, but he's got a little different defense than the Eagles. So it's tough to kind of make that correlation. But I'm not really sure. I don't really want to take anything. I think this is going to come down to the matchup on the field this week. I think there's advantages for the Patriots. I'm not going to play this. To me, I would feel like I'd rather have the Patriots in a teaser now that it's come down and you can get through the 7 and the 3 as opposed to taking a worse number with the Colts.
Yeah, it should be an interesting game, and the Colts still have ways to go before we have to think about them surprising anybody and competing for a playoff berth. New England, of course, looking to try and regain some of that form and swagger that they desperately missed over their 2-game losing streak, albeit riding the ship last weekend with a 38-7 win against the Dolphins. 6 big games this weekend, plenty to sink your teeth into from a sports betting perspective. But Payne, before we bid everyone a fond farewell and close the book on yet another successful week here on the Bet the Board podcast, what investment on Sunday slate may have caught your eye?
I got what you did there. It's got to be from Sunday.
Well, I mean, you know, we'll think about this out loud here. We can kind of go back and forth. We have one of two options. We can find something for Sunday, or we can make a case for Monday. I just want to make sure that all the listeners out here still come back and listen to the Monday podcast, knowing they're going to get great injury intel from Dr. Chow. We're going to talk about everything that surprised us, everything that disappointed us over the weekend. I just don't want folks mailing in Monday if we give them the key to Monday Night Football right here, right now.
That was the corporate guilt trip to all you listeners out there who aren't going to show up Monday if I give out the Monday game now. So you better not make me look bad.
So my take is, and it has always been, and correct me if I'm wrong, we give out our strongest stuff regardless of the day of the week that the game is played. I'd rather our listeners go to the window with our best bet. So if you feel that's Monday instead of Sunday, hey, let's do it.
Okay. Let's go with the Washington Redskins. And I would encourage right now, because you're not going to have that option, if you wait until Monday, I would buy the cheap hook here. I would get it to Washington +7. There are some cheap options there. You can certainly do it for 20 cents. And there's one or two options right now that you can get there for 15 cents. So like the Redskins +7 on the buy, go ahead and do that now. And don't make me look like an asshat for not showing if you don't show up.
Yeah,
well,
we will be keeping tabs on the listenership numbers there. And we're going to hold every single one of you accountable for that. But all kidding aside, I want to thank everybody for their great reviews. You guys have been excellent in terms of going to iTunes, giving us 5 stars, sharing your sentiment, growing the podcast, putting together record numbers so far through 2018, not only in the NFL, but also the college football ring. So continue to do that. Spread the gospel. Share, favorite, retweet. Do whatever you need to get the Bet the Board podcast in front of more ears across this fine country and everywhere else the rest of the world. Payne, it's almost time to say goodbye to everyone. Do you have any parting shots, any PSAs, any life advice, any life hacks, anything you'd like to offer up?
I'm good. I need a few days off.
Go ahead. Get some R&R. I know we got a lot of work to do on our own right to try and figure out the rest of our Sunday card. But for all you listeners out there, grab the 7. Grab it early. Grab it often on the Washington Redskins. It's not all the time you get a primetime winner here on the Bet the Board podcast. We had to give this one to you early so you can get the best of the number and laugh at all your friends. It'll be taking 5 and 5.5 closer to kickoff. For Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. You can follow Dave Mason as well at Dave Mason, B-O-L. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And of course, follow the podcast account at Bet the Board Pod. Best of luck, all things NFL Week 5. We'll be right back here with you on Monday to give you an in-depth breakdown of the Redskins and Saints, although we already gave you the answer key, Dr. Chow to talk injuries and everything you need to know going forward. And we'll see you at the window.